And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's 6 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 25th of March, 2024, and it's the start of another week here on the 9 to noon show. How are you all keeping? I hope you had a lovely weekend, or best a weekend you can have if you're working. I hope it went okay for you. But anyway, we want you with us for the next three odd hours. So we've got lots lined up on the show today. Jam-packed full of different items that hopefully will keep you informed, keep you entertained. We want your views, your comments, your suggestions, whatever it might be, to 086 60 25000. That's a WhatsApp and text number. You can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that number as well, by the way, if that suits you better than texting. And if you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000, and emails come in to us at comments@highlandradio.com. you can watch the program as well. We're on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. You can watch us on your big screen TV or your Fire Stick on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. We're streaming worldwide too on the X platform. Don't be afraid to say hello wherever you're watching us from, or in fact to interact with us on the socials as well. Right, let's look at the front of some of the papers this morning. The Derry People, Donegal News. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald is demanding that the government immediately release €1 million in funding to rebuild Rafoe Community Playgroups facility. It's emerged that Rafoe Preschool, which currently meets the needs of 46 toddlers, is set to be demolished as it was built using defective concrete blocks. The school is only 22 years old. Deputy MacDonald was speaking to the Donegal News during a whistle-stop visit to the county on Saturday. She was in the county as a show of support to the party's local TD Piers Doherty and Padraig McLaughlin, as well as Sinn Féin's local election candidates. Okay, so we'll see what she delivers if in power. The great list is getting longer and longer and longer. The Derry News this morning. A new task force has been announced to develop a plan to almost double the student population at the Ulster University's McGee campus. There are currently just over 5,000 students at the campus in Derry. On Friday, Economy Minister Conor Murphy launched a task force to develop and oversee an action plan to expand numbers to 10,000. It follows a commitment to expand the campus in the 2020 New Decade, New Approach deal, which would be a significant doubling. Well, no surprise to me, as you may have heard me waffling last week, no one decided to throw their hat into the ring. So Simon Harris is the new Fine Gael leader, and he will be ratified as Taoiseach. I don't know in this situation if they have to buy off the, negotiate with the independents, but he needs those numbers to be ratified, because it is the Dáil that makes the decision. He's pictured on the front of the page showing attitude. He is angry and he's pointing his finger out. And I suppose maybe too, he wants to early on show more of his character. Well, anyway, new Fine Gael leader and presumptive Taoiseach Simon Harris has signalled no snap general election, and that the government will run its full term until early next year. Speaking following the formal announcement of his unopposed election at a party conference in Athlone, Mr. Harris said he would meet Fine Gael ministers in the cabinet to set priorities what can be delivered in their areas in the remaining lifetime of the government. In a speech to party activists and members following his election yesterday, Mr. Harris said that under his leadership, Fine Gael would stand for supporting business, especially small businesses, and for making work pay. He also said the party stands for law and order on the side of An Garda Síochána, where our streets are safe and crime is never allowed to go unchecked. He also said he would seek to move from an emergency response to the migration crisis to a more planned, sustainable model, to a fair and firm system when it comes to migration. Okay, so as I say, he's looking quite stern on the front of the paper there. On to the Irish Independent now. This was referenced by Michaela in the news. Has prices increased in Ireland's most affordable counties? They soared by up to three times above the national average in the first 3 months of the year. This comes as buyers pursued cross-county affordability amid the worst supply levels in decades, along with some of the highest city prices. This has sparked significant price competition in cheaper counties such as Longford, where buyers are prepared to move from Dublin for hybrid working opportunities in homes selling at an average of 180 1,700, a rise of 7,700 in just 12 weeks. But in Donegal, this is the average price of a three-bed semi-detached, which I'm not really sure if there's that many, really. This is the model that they use anyway. But somewhat surprisingly, well, is it surprising? I don't know. Donegal is the cheapest in the country to buy a three-bed semi. 162,500. That's up 1.6%. Now, I would imagine there's not a great deal of property changing hands in Donegal. We know there is a shortage of rental property. There's also a shortage of available houses for sale or for people who need to move into moving into them. But that doesn't at this point seem to indicate a massive surge in property prices. I mean, Leitrim, which is quite a rural county, the average three-bed there is, where is it? I saw it a little earlier on, 185,000, but in Donegal, 162,000. That's a 23,000 difference. That being said, I wonder how many houses in Donegal they're judging those figures off. It's just something that might interest me. You might remember a few weeks ago we talked about the gym in the Dáil and how very, very few sessions have been very few sessions have been booked in the Dáil gym, but there are sessions ongoing because thirsty TDs and senators took full advantage of Leinster House's cut price booze prices last year, as new figures reveal more than 10,000 pints of Guinness were knocked back in the Dáil's two bars. A total of 10,031 pints of plain were supped in the House of the Oireachtas, two licensed premises in 2023, and Guinness emerged as the biggest seller among politicians and Leinster House staff, and with a pint of the black stuff at Leinster House costing just £5.20, which is, how much is a pint of Guinness in Donegal? Well, anyway, a fraction of the price in nearby city centre bars, it's clear our elected reps are getting more bang for their buck than the average punter. The next most popular draft beer purchased was Heineken, 1,869 pints guzzled, while Cork Dry Gin was the spirit of choice with 1,620 measures sold. Wine was another big seller with their own brand Oireachtas at £6.40 a glass, proving to be the favourite, selling 4,102 units between January 1st, 23 and December 31st, 2023. Almost €360,000 was put across the bar last year, according to figures obtained under the Freedom of Information Act. On to now the Irish Mirror. And Europe should be concerned about the threat of Islamic State following the Moscow terror attack, the British Chancellor warned yesterday. The atrocity had echoes of the 2015 Bataclan concert hall attack in Paris, when 130 people were killed by IS. Jeremy Hunt described the loss of civilian life on Friday night as a tragedy after 137 were shot and bombed. Asked whether European nations should be concerned by the threat of IS, Mr. Hunt said absolutely. He praised intelligence for foiling terrorist threats in recent years, but added, we have to remain vigilant. If it is Islamic State, I beg your pardon, they're prepared to murder in the most horrific ways. And sadly, these attacks, especially given the role of certain European countries in these world events, and I suppose it's something too we need to keep an eye on, given our stance on certain things, it's an inevitability that Belgium, France, Germany, Britain, and who's to say, God forbid, Dublin, God forbid anywhere, but you know what I mean, that they are likely targets, as I say, given the stance on certain things. In the Star this morning, a transgender darts player who beat top Irish ladies champ Katie Sheldon in a PDC Women's Series final over the weekend has revealed how she has been the target of online abuse. Dutch player Noah Lynn van Leuven won the Women's Series 2 event with a 5-2 victory over Dubliner Sheldon on Saturday. The victory came just a week after van Leuven also picked up a win on the men's PDC Challenge Tour. However, van Leuven, who's 28, who transitioned into a woman at age 17, says she often gets negative comments online, with some fans suggesting she should not be allowed to play in the women's event. She said, I just want to do my thing, but it seems like people have to comment. They often don't even read what is written. They immediately have reflex. Well, it's actually at the point now, the PDC have a very active Twitter account where they track results and what have you. And there's a lot of interaction on it. But if they post anything to do with Noah Lynn. They actually turn comments off on X. I've actually noticed that. But she's won in the women's, and last week she won in the men's. Right. Lastly, in the Irish Sun, just a note on the latest opinion polls released over the weekend. I don't write this. This is just the way it's written. A poll shows Sinn Féin has lost support and independents have risen past Fianna Fáil among political parties. Independent candidates surged by 3 points to 17% of would-be first preference votes in the SBP Red Sea poll, ahead of Fianna Fáil on 16%. But after previous highs, Sinn Féin, led by Mary Lou MacDonald, has fallen 3 points to 25%, their joint lowest score since the start of the pandemic. Fine Gael fell by 1% to 19. So you add Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and they are well ahead of Sinn Féin at this stage. Also, their joint lowest score since early 2020. I was wondering last week how Aim to might fare in the next opinion poll, and they fared quite well. They rose 2 points to 5, so that's a significant increase in support. What about 40%? While the Greens are up 1 to 4, the Social Democrats polled 6%, Labour 3, People 4, Profit Solidarity 3%. The study was made before Mr. Varadkar announced his resignation last week. So we'll watch again for the latest as it is released. Now, we're going back to the story that we covered in quite some detail in the earlier part of this year. You might remember the news that physio services were being moved from St. Joseph's Hospital to two other locations, and there was concerns expressed by GPs and others that this would interfere with moving people to St. Joseph's for step-down care, whatever it might be. There was a meeting between concerned committee members and the community and the HSC earlier in March, and the committee met at the weekend also to see where things are at. I'm going to say good morning first, if that's okay, to Father Lorcan Sharkey, who's vice chair of the Save Our St. Joseph's Hospital Committee. Good morning to you, Father Sharkey.
Good morning to you, Greg.
Good to speak to you. Right. So can we go back maybe to the mid-March meeting maybe talk to us a little bit about that and what you were told, what assurances you received, if any?
Yes, Greg. We had our meeting with the HSE on Wednesday, the 13th of March. And we concluded at the end that as a committee, we felt it was a very positive and affirmative meeting. There were five representatives from HSE there, with particularly Frank Morrison, who is head of services for older persons, leading the HSE team. And on our side, then we had Patrick McGowan, Councillor Patrick McGowan, and three others. And then we were very delighted to see him coming as one of our local GPs, Dr. Dennis McCauley. He joined us as well. So we had a very positive and affirmative meeting. And I recall particularly that Frank Morrison, when we began the meeting after we had introduced ourselves, his opening question to us was very interesting, is what are your main concerns coming to this meeting today? So they were open to listening to us. And I told them on behalf of our group that we had already submitted from a previous meeting to them a list of questions that we wanted to have clarified. And he said, our response to you today is based on those questions. So that's how we were very positive.
Now, there was a drip of information in relation to initially, I won't go through the entire timeline, but initially the HSC said that these physiotherapy and occupational therapy services would have to be removed from the hospital because of upgrading works due to a HICRA report. They'd be provided in Donegal Town and to Lifford. Then we heard Dr. Dennis McCauley say that, well, this is incredibly concerning because unless they are actually on site, to refer people there or for them to move to the hospital there to continue their treatment would be problematic. Then the HSC released a statement saying that some of those services would be provided on the ward. And it all became a little bit confusing for me looking from the outside on to sort of track all what was going on. So can you clear up any of that for us as to what the current situation is?
Yes, of course, of course. First of all, the physio had to be moved to Donegal and to Lippert, but that is a temporary measure because due to a HICWA report in January 24, there was a red alert raised about the fire regulations in the hospital throughout. And so when parts of the hospital were being renovated, the patients in that part of the hospital would have to be relocated. And one of the wards that was taken over years ago for physiotherapy was what is known as the Drogheda ward, or Drogheda ward. And that is where the physiotherapy had been located, and that now had to be taken over. So for that reason, the physio had to be removed temporarily to both Donegal Town Hospital and to Lippert Hospital. And Dr. McCauley then raised the issue of the quality of the physio that would be available and would it continue to be available, particularly to step down patients coming from Letterkenny Hospital. And he was assured that it would be to an adequately high standard. And I believe that at the end of that meeting that Dr. McCauley was happy with that clarification.
Okay, because what was because there's about 100 referrals to the hospital a week on average, and it just wasn't clear from the initial press releases. I think it took about the fourth or fifth press release where that was clarified. But so also to in successive press releases, the HSE said that they wanted to relocate these services to a suitable location in the Finn Valley area. Was there any clarification on that? Are they looking for a different premises, or when they talk like that, are they talking about returning them to St. Joseph's?
Well, because of the nature of physiotherapy, they need a lot of space because of the equipment that they have, so they need quite a large room for that. And it's quite possible that physiotherapy may return to a part of the hospital. It's been looked at the moment as a suitable, but not all the services will return to the campus of St. Joseph's, but they will be relocated quite close by so that people will have less and less travelling to do.
Was there any...
We're happy about that.
I beg your pardon, Father. Was there any reference to other services that have been lost? Because a lot of people felt that this was like the death by a thousand cuts. You know, podiatry, chiropractic, dental in particular has concerned people. Did the HSE talk of those services at all?
Oh, indeed they did, because we clarified that with them. Those services will also be returning, not just physio, but the other services as well, such as podiatry and chiropody and so on like that. These things will be coming back in dental as well. They're looking at the moment at different premises in the area. Finn Valley area is a big area, I suppose, but we're hoping that they would be as close to Ballybuffaston or our area as possible.
Now, the name of the group of which you're vice chair is Save Our St. Joseph's Hospital. Satisfied that the future of St. Joseph's is secured, and that we're not seeing a chipping away because of course as you move things off campus, right, then what does St. Joseph's actually become into the future going forward? So are you clear as much as you can be with the assurances that you've been given, the HSE commitment to this facility and how it survives going forward if there's a centre of excellence or some other building providing a lot of these services in the vicinity?
Yeah, we're happy about that. Frank Morrison, who chaired the meeting on behalf of the HSE, assured us that the aim of HSE is to keep the hospital as busy as it is at present. Now, about 5 or 6 years ago, there were 68 beds in the hospital. But because of HICWA requirements, the number of beds had to be reduced due to the privacy of patients and so on and that. So the number of beds in each ward had gradually been reduced, so that at present, as we stand at the moment, there are 63 beds occupied in the hospital. And the aim of HSE is to continue with a minimum of 60 and maybe even 63 when everything, all the renovations are completed. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, if a ward is being renovated, people, residents in that ward have to be moved somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then when that ward has been renovated, they will move back in again. So the vacant ward that was there for them was Drogheda ward where physiotherapy used to be located. But at the end, when all of the renovations are completed on a time scale of maybe 6 to 9 months, the St. Joseph's Hospital will be a hospital with 4 wards rather than 3 wards mm-hmm. as at present. And there will be adequate privacy for all the residents. So the idea of HSE is at the moment, and they assured us about this, is to keep the hospital as busy as it is at mm-hmm. present. So we're very assured about that.
Okay.
With all the other services coming back to the general area.
If not
to the campus.
On site, yeah, I get you. But what I don't know if we ever learn any lessons in this country. I'm not sure if all of this has been decided after the public furore or it was always on the cards. But we could have saved an awful lot of stress and anxiety here, the HSE could have, by releasing a properly worded statement, talking of the future, talking a little bit of timelines, talking of dental, chiropody, podiatry, committing to the future of keeping this a busy facility. This could have been, right from the get-go, a really positive news story. But instead, people have been, you know, you had to leave your house and others had to leave your house to attend these meetings and all that for clarification. We don't seem to learn any lessons That's about correct. Communications in this country. Such unnecessary anxiety.
Absolutely. And in fact, in that sphere, Greg, it must be noted as well that when our committee has been in existence for 6 or 7 years now, long before COVID came along, and we used to meet regularly, when particularly we heard a statement read into the Dáil record that the future plan of HSE was to close St. Joseph's Hospital. And that is still the Dáil record. Mm-hmm. And we have requested that be corrected. And we were told by the members of HSE who were there that the only people who could do that is one of our local TDs to ask the question in Dáil Éireann of the Minister for Health, what is the present plan of the HSE for St. Joseph's? Mm-hmm. And that then will be an opportunity for the Minister for Health, whoever it will be at that present time, to clarify and tell us all the exact situation. And of course, you're correct about the information on coming out in bits and pieces and so on like that. And we did impress that on HSE members who were there at the meeting with us on Wednesday the 13th, that we would need to be better communicating with each other.
Yeah,
and they promised that they would keep in touch with us regularly from now on.
Because I think there was we were harassing their email, I'm not going to lie to you, but I think there was 6 emails and it got slightly longer with slightly more information every time. And even a spokesperson, if they had come on, we could have cleared all of this up much more quickly. Father Lorcan, I'm sure you're busy this morning, so I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you very much for joining us and for giving us that update. And it's nice that
you
seem somewhat
welcome.
Positive.
Thank you very much. Bye. It's very positive and very affirmative. Thank you very much, Greg.
Okay.
Bye-bye now. Thank
bye
you.
Bye-bye, Father Lorcan Sharkey, Vice Chair of the Save Our St. Joseph's Hospital Committee. You heard Fianna Fáil Councillor Patrick McGowan referenced in the course of that conversation, and he is with us also on the programme now. Obviously, Father, just to make sure you're on mute, Patrick, obviously, Father Sharkey has been very detailed in the information there. But if he's seeing this as a positive, that's almost good enough for me, I think.
Yeah, look, and I'd also just like to thank Jonathan Kelly and Margaret Hines. Margaret took the minutes, which is not an easy challenge sometimes, and we actually got them agreed with the HSE before we went out. We wanted to get the confusion out of it, and as you say too, the main thing to come out of this, we've agreed a communication strategy. They're going to stay in regular contact with our chairperson, who is now John Gallagher. Father John Joe is no longer the chairperson, but he remains committed to the committee, and something the committee is very grateful, because Father John Joe had done a lot of work behind the scenes before we went and met them, and also to thank Chair McConnell for setting up that meeting and the HSE for meeting us. But also, important people here are the committee, and their friends and neighbours, and the patients of the hospital. So, look, I would concur, and we all concurred, that it was a good, positive meeting. It's regrettable. It's taken years of sort of rumours and indecisions, and obviously what happened a couple of weeks ago come like a bombshell, but very important what Father Sharkey said there. Like, we are on a positive note now, and we're going to keep in regular contact with the HSE.
Yeah, and I think it's very important too that they are kept to their timelines as well, and kept to these commitments.
Yeah, there's a lot on this. We covered a lot, and it was great to have Dr. McCauley there. He dropped. He agreed. He had been in UK the day before. He had come back. He changed his schedule. So we're very grateful, because he was able to get into the real technical stuff. He was talking about protocols and what protocol they're acting under. The rest of us were kind of more general in our knowledge of the hospital and the different services. And we all know what we have lost. So we did get an explanation. We've got approximate time frames. They are for the daycare services, which have been lost in a lot of hospitals during COVID. They're going to be relocated temporary, or they're going to be a place found them temporary in the Fin Valley area. And then, as I say, one of the people there is Kathleen O'Dwyer. She's a property manager for Donegal, and she has said she has identified, in her opinion, a suitable location within St. Joseph's. There's a building there that's not been used, and we would see either the daycare service come back there or the physio with other services. So look, there's a lot of work to be done. They have explained to us, as Father Sharkey said, that there was an inspection done by HICWA in January, and that's just turned the whole thing upside down, because all of the wards needs a new fire certain that.
But look, I think what people want to be sure of is that, you know, these HICWA reports aren't really being used as an opportunity to, you know, reduce services, close things down and what have you. And that's why I think it's so important the HSC could have used this opportunity to reassure people of that. They must know. They've got a communications department that is incredibly well-staffed and incredibly well-resourced. And they should start sort of doing some of that stuff instead of firefighting. Yeah. Work. In fact, work with the media and councillors. If there's good news, get it out there.
Yeah. You know, I think too, we did ask them, look what we said to them, communicate with us. We're not trying to undermine the health forum that's there with the councillors and all the people. We're not looking to undermine or get information for the Dáil or anything else. We just simply want to know. And like, people were very, very worried, because that rumour is still there about St. Joseph's Program. Which it is not. And I have undertaken now to try and get an answer put to the Minister and the Dáil, the Minister of Health, just to clarify, you know, that particular thing. But look, as Father Sharkey says, we left that meeting, all of us, on a positive note, but we won't be taking nothing for granted. We ain't going away. No. Simple as
okay.
that.
And I would love to be of the nature to be able to take the HSC at its word, but unfortunately, I'm not of that nature, so we'll have to keep a very close eye on this as well from our side of things. For now, Councillor Patrick McGarren, thank you very much for joining us. Have a good day.
And you too.
Appreciate it. All right, bye-bye. Okay, we go west now to Letterkenny. Cathal McGlynn is chair of the Ballymacool Residents Association. Cathal, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you getting on?
I'm doing all right. Now, the association has been contacted by a number of residents. And tell us the background to this story for those who aren't aware.
Yeah, Greg. So last year, around September time, 20 families in the estate in Ballymacool received eviction notices from the landlord out there, Twin Estates, asking them to vacate their homes so that the houses could be sold. There's a lot of work has gone on since that happened. I suppose, you know, we've been in the media quite a bit with yourselves on Highland Radio and in some of the local papers and that. And we've been working closely with the County Council and with the Housing Authority and different organisations to try our best to try and keep these families in their homes. We had eight of the families that were deemed eligible for, you know, there's two schemes basically that are available for families if they're facing homelessness that they can avail of. And one of them is the tenant in situ scheme, which basically means that if a family is deemed eligible to get on the council housing list, then the council can then purchase that property and keep the family in their home. Also, the other scheme is the cost rental tenant in situ scheme, and basically with that scheme, if they're not eligible to meet the housing list or the council housing list, then the houses can then be purchased by the housing authority, and the families can be kept in their home. So we had eight families were eligible for the tenant in situ scheme and six families that were eligible for the cost rental tenant in situ scheme. So basically, you know, we thought that there was some light at the end of the tunnel and that things were moving forward well. You know, families were hopeful that through these schemes that they weren't going to have to vacate their homes and they'd be able to stay in the area where they live and work and have lived and worked for a number of years.
So what do you believe is going on here? Because, you know, the council's talking of process and due diligence and what have you, you know, but what does that mean to these families?
So last week, the landlord, Twin Estates again, sent out an email, to eight of the families that are eligible for the tenant in situ scheme, that they now had to vacate their homes by the 12th of April. They were saying that they had no correspondence back from the council and that they needed to go ahead with the sale of the homes. Mm-hmm. So we're like nearly 3 weeks away from that now. And we're back nearly to square one, where the families are now being told again that they have to vacate their homes. We had correspondence with the council then. Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh raised it at the housing meeting last Thursday. And the council have stated that they are committed to buying these homes, but due diligence has to be followed. So basically, you know, according to the council, they have to follow certain process procedures before they can purchase the homes. One of them being the structural engineers reports, which the structural engineers were in at the end of January and checked out all the houses. So they were still waiting for reports back from the structural engineers to say whether the houses are sound before the council can go ahead and buy them. Also, what we believe is, you know, the department would have to release the funds or make the funds available again for the council to purchase these houses. So we were pleading and asking Twin Estates to hold back.
But for how long, though?
The evictions.
The council, is it not that, you know, maybe the council could formally express an interest? I mean, obviously, this is private property and you know, people are entitled to do, thankfully, in 2024 with their property what they wish. Or that being said, that might sound a little bit insensitive. I don't mean it to be like that. But my question is like, can the council not expedite this or speed it up or at least say, right, we've done our diligence. Now we're just waiting for the money to come down from government. That might be enough. And we'll speak to the owner of these properties in a moment. That might be enough to say, right, well, that's a solid enough commitment for me to move forward in what other business endeavours I might have.
Yes, Greg. Ideally, that would be the case. Now, I mean, there is legislation in place that you cannot evict any more than 10 families in one area at the one time. You know, so that legislation is in place there, and I think this is like a divide and conquer exercise as well. But we would be asking the council and urging the council to try and speed this process up as quick as possible. I mean, obviously, you know, the bureaucracy can hold things back and it can be sitting on somebody's table waiting to be signed off. But, you know, in an ideal world, we would really, really like to get this sped up and get the process sorted, you know, so that both the landlord and the families are happy with the outcome. But in the meantime, the council have stated that they will not be able to meet the deadline that Twin Estates has demanded. But we are pleading, and you know, I mean, these are families. Where are they supposed to go? We're in the middle of a housing crisis. There are no homes there. Presently, we checked last week, there are three houses locally available for rent on daft.ie with extortionate rents that families cannot afford. So that's where we're left sitting. Mm-hmm. Where do these families go? There's nowhere for them to go to. They're going to be put out on the streets, and that is the truth about it. So then we also had another situation which came about on Friday evening, which came as a shock to all the residents on the estate, where they received the six families that were waiting for, or that were deemed eligible for the cost rental tenants in such a scheme with the housing authority, received emails at 4:30 on Friday to tell them that the housing authority were now not proceeding or not progressing with the purchase of those houses. So now those families, the rug has pulled completely from under their feet. They're devastated. These families are just, they're absolutely devastated.
Absolutely,
I've had them on the phone to me the last few days, some of the mothers in the houses in tears, you know, not knowing where they're going to go or what they're going to do or what we can do next. Okay. So, I mean, we're back to a stage now where I think we're even worse than we were at the start,
right.
At the beginning.
Cattle,
we're being left with absolutely no hope whatsoever.
I get you. I want to leave enough time for me to hear from Phil Boyle from Twin Estates, the owner of these properties. Phil, thanks for speaking to us. I really do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? Good morning, Cahill.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
Right, okay. So, Phil, just, I mean, you've heard Cahill outline pretty fairly to what he sees as the situation, Phil. These are your houses. This is a business of yours, I presume. When did you decide you wanted to sell them, and what has the engagement been with the council like since?
We decided to sell these houses back in September. We don't have to get into the reasons of that. It was a business decision, and that is just the nature of business, unfortunately. It wasn't a decision that was taken lightly. It was a decision that was taken above my head in London, and so we decided that we would go with it, and I would have then sent out notices of terminations to all the families affected. At that time, though, I was speaking off the record to the county council, to the housing agencies, to see if there were any of these houses that these people would be interested in buying on their behalf. Because being the landlord there for the past 4 years, I know that certain tenants of mine would be on the housing assistance program. So I knew that the people on the housing assistance program would be eligible for council houses. So I've been working tirelessly, Greg, with all the tenants in affected by this since October, speaking to the housing agency, speaking to the county councils, and trying to get them to come in to sort this issue out. The cost rental tenant in situ scheme, Greg, is a new scheme that started last March 2023, and that was put in place by the government to allow for tenants that were facing eviction. It was allowing the government to come in certain situations and buy those houses if they fell within certain means. I spoke to the housing authority. They said there was a closing date by the 31st of December last year. I worked tirelessly with six of the residents to get them over the line. We managed to get everything over the line before Christmas last year. I spoke to the housing authority on numerous occasions. They were very open, very professional, and they said, look, everything looks good. We're sending engineers out now in January to look at them. And then after the engineers' reports come back, we believe then what happens then is the bidding process. So I was all excited. I was talking to the tenants. I said, look at guys, do not panic. I'm speaking to these people every week. On the other side, I had another eight of my tenants that were in receipt of the housing assistance program. So I contacted the county council themselves regarding this. This is a situation that under a housing assistance program, the county council can bid for the houses. They can buy the houses, and then the tenant becomes the county council becomes the landlord then in that case. Whereas with the cost rental tenant institute, the housing agency becomes the landlord. They then sell to a local housing body and they become the landlord of those six tenants. Now, my problem is I really want a win-win situation here. It's very, very stressful for everybody involved, and I understand that completely. I would ask you to ask any of the tenants up there, any one of them that I haven't met, that I haven't sat down with, that I haven't tried to deal with this kind of on a one-to-one basis in my offices. Yes, they are in, you know, I've had these tenants in my offices crying. I've been saying, look, good lads, do not worry. We will get over this line. Now, my main problem is with the Donegal County Council. And unfortunately, instead of Cathal McGlynn being on the radio here, Cathal, and no offence to you, and I respect you and respect everything that you're saying there, it should be a county council people that are on here. I have been banging my head for 6 months trying to get conversations with the county council. They won't engage with me. They send engineers out without telling me. Sending engineers out. There is such poor communication.
It was stated that the area manager was in communication with you in the last couple of weeks. Did that happen or?
That happened after I emailed county councillors to say, what is happening here? I have to impress on these councillors. Look at folks. These people have been notices. You know, they were given notices in October. That's almost 5 months ago. You know, I need to impress on them the urgency of the situation. You know, the real world works quickly, but unfortunately the public sector does not work that same way. I mean, I am waiting. I'm in a situation now that I'm waiting for the county council to come back to me and tell me exactly what type of testing is required for each of these houses before that they will even consider buying the house.
Fast forward things a little, Phil. Is there anything that the council can say to you other than confirm a purchase or progress between now and April the 12th that will defer, that will make Twin Estates revise that April 12th eviction date?
First of all, Cathal is wrong in terms of what I emailed the tenants there a couple of weeks ago. When I emailed the tenants a couple of weeks ago, I said, look at guys, it's coming close to your termination times. What I would like you to do, guys, is I need you to pick up the phone. I need you to talk to your local councillors, and I need you to impress on them the urgency of this situation. That is what I emailed to them. Get on to it. Start banging on doors because it doesn't seem to be working on my side. I mean, 10 emails I sent out, I got two responses. I mean, we're in a situation here that we're going to local government elections. Not one of these people have come back to me, bar two, you know, over the past 6 months. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I feel for these people. The housing crisis, the micro crisis, it is an absolute disaster for people. And I want to do my best.
Is there an eviction day of April 12th at this point?
There is an eviction day of April 12th at this point. Now, what I have suggested to the tenants, look at, from a legal point of view, I cannot put down anything in writing to say that, you know, I'm extending that. But from what I would ask the tenants to do, don't panic. Nobody's going to be kicked out on the 12th of April. What I want you to do is, it's considered as overholding. But I'm not putting that on record, because if I put that on record or on down in paper, that's me pretty much telling them that, you know, that the contract or the notice of terminations are null and void. You know, I'm under pressure to sell these houses, as is my right as a private company to sell these houses. But I would ask the county council to come on here, Greg, and explain to you why it is such a broken system there.
Okay, well, we'll make those inquiries. Carl, you heard from Phil there. Is there, do you sympathise with his frustration in trying to deal with the council on this issue?
Well, I think that initially, you know, this mess has been caused by Twin Estates deciding to evict the families in the first place, you know, and I don't believe that they have the best interests of those families at heart.
Do you believe, though, Cahill, that a private company is entitled to sell the properties, and they've given the council the option of buying them? I mean, we can't. Yes, these are only questions, Can we expect the private sector to be doing the work of, you know, the council and the housing bodies?
Well, we would like everybody to step up to the mark, and nobody wants to see anybody evicted. We all want to see those families kept in their homes, you know, and obviously we've been working closely with some of the councillors, with Micheál Colum McGill Asbug, with Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh and with Michael McBride, who have all been making representations on our behalfs and on behalfs of the residents there, you know, and
Phil, come back in next. I only have about a minute. Phil, do you want to come back there? We would really like to see the council
speed this process up. I have stated that before. We'd like to see the council speed this process up. There are also families that are...
All right, Cal, if you just hold a sec, I want to give Phil a chance to reply, because I do have to break for the 10 o'clock news. Go ahead, Phil.
Is for the council to actually put in writing that they're willing to buy these houses subject to these mica tests coming back, and that them being fine and good and within a certain, you know, percentage. We've had mica tests done and everything is fine up in Ballymacool, and I want them to come back and confirm to me in writing, yes, we will progress with this further if the mica results come back, you know, and everything is positively good.
That would give you space. Are you saying, Phil, that would give you space with the company?
Absolutely would give me space with the company. Right, now, from the housing, I'm very, very disappointed that they would even email people before they would email me. And, like, they came back with a vague point that we're not progressing further with this. I emailed them back and I said, I'm sorry, but I've been working with you for 6 months, and now you're saying not progressing. Please explain to me why you're not progressing.
Right, okay, listen, I have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Cahill, for cutting across there towards the end. It's just to try and give everyone a crack of the whip. I do appreciate your time. Cahill McGlynn, Chair of the Ballymacool Residents Association, Phil Boyle of Twin Estates, and we, of course, will find out as much as we can from the council where their position is.